It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. I think one of the pieces of work that I and a lot of people struggle with these days is understanding how to connect with others in a distributed form over Zoom or whatever video platform. But also, I feel like we're missing empathy in person too. And that's why we have on today, Allison Jane Martin-Gano, who is an assistant professor and director of the UWGB Social Research Lab and host of Psychology and Stuff podcast. She is an empathy expert. And that is what we're going to get into today and talk about empathy and what it means and what it means for work and how we do it in person and remotely. Allison Jane, thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
So let's start at the beginning. That's always a good place to start. one of the pieces that I guess struck me when I first watched some of your videos and your talks was that not everybody has the same definition of empathy. Empathy can be thought of in a couple different ways. Let's start off there. What is empathy and how do we think about it?
Yes, asking my favorite question right at the start there. Appreciate it. So empathy is one of those terms that can mean a lot of different things. And actually, empathy researchers themselves don't even agree on exactly what things count and what shouldn't count as empathy. But there is some broad consensus that there are two main forms of empathy, which we call cognitive empathy and emotional empathy. So cognitive empathy is essentially empathy with your head. So this is imagining what someone else is going through, thinking about their mental state, what they're feeling. But you're not necessarily having an emotional reaction to them. You're just understanding them cognitively. Emotional empathy, on the other hand, is the exact opposite. So emotional empathy is empathy with your heart. This is where we feel for other people. We feel compassion. We feel warmth. We feel sympathy for them. Now, these two do, you know, tend to go along together. When we understand what someone's going through, we're likely to then feel for them. So they do go along. But some of us are better at one and worse at the other. And certain environments, as you mentioned, like online or in person, are more conducive to creating one of these over the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, which one does online, where do we go? Here's why I'm interested, right? I want to understand why it's so hard, why it's different. I'm not going to even say it's hard. Why is it different working with other humans over, not in person, distributed over video? That's my big question. And I'll let you answer in the more specifics, but that's really what I want to get to. Like, it's just so different. Let's talk about why it is so different and how empathy plays a role.
Yeah. So I think the challenges of sort of online communication. So we're having a Zoom call right now. And so this is a great example of it makes it more challenging, actually, I would say, for both types of empathy, but in different ways. So I'll start with the emotional sort. So when we're having that emotional reaction to someone, we're taking into consideration their tone of voice, their facial expressions, their posture. Some of that I can pick up online, which is why it's easier to feel for someone you see in a video than it is just audio, because you do get that extra information, which is why cameras on is a big part in my research lab, at least. But we're still missing a lot of information. So as human beings, we're not judging someone's emotional state simply off their facial expressions. We're taking into account what we can see in the world around them. So something that could look like fear could actually be excitement if we see the roller coaster in the background, right? And so when we're on a Zoom call, usually, you know, I have a very fairly blank background, we don't get much external information. You don't know what their context is. You don't know what they did 5 minutes before they got on the call. And so we're missing a lot of that contextual information that would normally help us judge how someone else is feeling. So I think that that messes up a lot of those emotional cues. On the cognitive side, we can, of course, still ask questions. So as long as we're in a conversation, a back and forth with each other, like we are now, I can ask questions and figure out what you're thinking or feeling. But if we're talking a large Zoom call, like a meeting with 50, 100 people, something like that, there's a social pressure not to raise your hand and check on every little thing. So in that situation, we're not going to be able to ask those clarifying questions or get that understanding. So it makes it harder in both senses. But actually, when we're talking about cognitive empathy, it being hard isn't necessarily a bad thing. And this is going to get into one of the things I love to talk about, which is empathy as a muscle. So just because it's more challenging doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, because it can actually be an opportunity to essentially practice a difficult skill and maybe improve it in the long run.
When you're talking about, I guess what is interesting, an interesting factor that these Zoom calls allow us to do is actually be more likely to be in a room with 100 people more than it would be in person. Because I'm thinking like, well, how would I do that? How would I check in with 100 people in person, right? Like there's just not a good way to do that anyways. I guess raise of hands, right? If I had control over the room, right? Or like that's what I try to do when I introduce a workshop. It's like some sort of engagement, but you're just in, I guess the better point here is that you're in these kind of odd situations that haven't occurred previously that technology allows. And so you're like seeing 100 people, or you're in a class with 100 people and you're like seeing their faces, and you don't know, like people, some have off, and you know, it's like, or your colleagues, right? So you're just, it feels to me, this is my experience of it, is overwhelmed by a lack of information, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Right? No, absolutely. And because there is so many sources of information. If we think of an in-person event, even a large one, maybe a town hall where you've got a big audience and one or two speakers, you're still getting information from everyone else around you. So if, say, the speaker tells a joke, but maybe it's not clear whether it was supposed to be funny or not, you're going to look to the folks around you. Is everybody else laughing, right? And you're getting that social validation and those social cues. But when we're all just little boxes on the screen, you don't have that person next to you in the same way you do sat in a town hall. And then also, of course, everybody is setting up their Zoom slightly differently. So some people might be looking at the audience as well as the speaker. Some people only have the PowerPoints up and totally pretending there's no one else in the room. And so we don't have that shared environment as much as we normally do when we're sitting in a physical space together, and we can be like, yeah, we're all in the same four walls. We're all hearing the same thing.
Yeah. That context is really interesting. I think there's a temporal context too. Like if you recall back in the day where we would show up to a conference room to have a meeting, you kind of know, even if you hadn't seen that person in earlier in the day, you kind of know where they came from. You kind of know like, oh, they've just came from the kitchen, or I saw them, you know, passing by, whatever. And to me, there's those interstitial moments even before the meeting starts that you just don't get. Is that part of it? Would you call that part of the context? Because it doesn't feel like a lot of information, but maybe it is.
Yeah, just knowing that they have, in fact, been in the office all day and you've all been there for an hour since 9 a.m. is a shared piece of knowledge that you can sort of predict where they are, because you know whether it was cold in the office that day, whether the fire alarm went off or whatever. But if someone's been at home, you don't know whether they have a sick child or whether they have something else going on literally 2 minutes before they stepped into that Zoom call. And so there's a little bit less shared information that we can assume, and a lot more information that we actually have to try and gather, which we can think of as an opportunity, but it is a challenge. And empathy isn't easy. It's a hard task, even in our sort of natural in-person state. It's an even harder task when we add in all of these virtual variables.
So talk to me about the empathy muscle and how we start to practice that. And maybe the way that we should build this is we'll start just kind of with what does it take to build empathy in person? And then let's kind of layer on, make it a little harder by going over Zoom. What is that? How does that sound?
Yeah. So empathy, especially that cognitive empathy I was talking about, empathy with your head, understanding what other people are going through, is definitely a learnable, practicable skill, which is the good news. The bad news is that it's a hard skill to practice. And just like, that's why we use a muscle metaphor, just like exercise, it's hard work and mm-hmm. you've got to keep doing it. And the truth is, I think we all sit and say, yeah, empathy is great. I wish I was better at that. But we don't want to put in the hard work to essentially go to the gym and, mm-hmm. and practice all the time. But the ways in which we can practice empathy are almost limitless. It's just a matter of doing it. So anytime you're interacting with somebody who doesn't agree with you, somebody who holds a different perspective, someone who's had different life experiences, that's an opportunity to try and figure out what's going on in their head. And essentially, that's what empathy is. It's understanding what they are thinking and feeling. And so I can try and do that right now, try and figure out what you're thinking and feeling, Josh, mm-hmm. or I can, you know, sit here and try and figure out what my audio assistant is thinking or what a fictional character is thinking. There are just any, it doesn't even have to be a real person. It can mm-hmm. be a fictional character, a movie star, a literary character from a book. It can be your pet dog and sit and try and figure out what they're thinking and feeling. And these are all opportunities. The problem is picking the one that's like the right level of difficult. So much like if you go to the gym and you need to select the right weight class, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to pick up the 5 pounds or the 25 pounds. We need to pick the empathy task that is going to challenge us, but not challenge us so much that we just break down and we can't do it. So mm-hmm. if I'm trying to take the opinion of maybe a political candidate who has opposing views for me, that's going to be really hard. Maybe on my best day, I could do that. But most days, that's probably going to be too difficult. Taking the perspective of my best friend, probably too easy. Understand them too well. That's a simple task. So we were trying to look for that sweet spot of difficulty. And you said then to layer in the online. So what I think that does is it makes everything more difficult. So taking the perspective of my best friend might be super easy in person. It's slightly more difficult online.
Because you don't know, like you talked about, you don't know what she's just been through. You might guess you know the pieces of her life, but you don't know where they're placed that day. So it's going to be a little harder to, well, maybe I can put it this way. It takes a little longer to warm up.
Yes. And I think we do as a culture naturally, you know, we ask people, we try and get that context. Maybe we don't think of it as I'm trying to get the context of how you are right now. You know, the first thing you say is, you know, hey, how you doing? And you're trying to gather, like if there's something major, hopefully you would mention it there so that I help us ground ourselves in everybody else's where they're coming from. And that means then when later they're asked a question and they have a kind of fiery response, you can understand, oh, I get why you're reacting that way because I understand that you had a hard night and you didn't sleep well. So like now I get why you're responding in this sort of perhaps seemingly slightly more aggressive way. Mm-hmm. I think that when we were in person, you know, back in the day, you would come to a meeting and folks would come a little early or maybe a little late, but there would be that time for chit chat and like getting that context. And people do sometimes do it at the beginning of like a Zoom call, but it's less. And I think that also doesn't help.
It's a lot less in my experience. And one of the learnings that are skills that I've built is trying to facilitate that. It doesn't happen. So this practice, we used to just kind of, it used to happen automatically and it was easier. So now it's harder. And the challenge that I put to leaders and managers who hold team meetings is how are you warming them up? How are you learning the context? What are the questions you might ask? Is it kind of a pre-seated question? Hey, Allison Jane, can you come and, you know, ask a question or answer a question, or everybody answers a question? It just is part of this kind of warm-up routine, but everybody feels very pressured and it's time pressured. And it takes some time to do this.
Right. Whereas it used to happen organically. And of course, you could just talk sort of one-on-one. Now we have that often, at least in meetings I go to, you like go around the room virtually and everybody has to say something, which isn't quite the same as just sort of checking in with just the person next to you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels weird, right? All right. We just showed up. I'm going to push the breakout button. Everybody chit chat for a little bit. You're like, with who and how and what, you know? So yeah, this is so what in your experience is short of just, you know, it's like, what is this person in my head? Like, what is this person thinking? Like, what is a good way to warm up, whether that be in person where you have zero context or online, which is more likely that you have zero context in these, like, let's call it a small team meeting.
Yeah. So I think that there's two things I would sort of first jump to. The first one is sort of being observant to the extent that it's possible. Assuming you're meeting with people who you meet with regularly, you might notice that they suddenly have a blurred background on, or they're in a different setting to they normally are. And sort of clocking that in your head. Oh, okay. I can see that something has happened with them since how we normally meet. Their setting is different. That probably cues you in something's going wrong. So I know that the information we have is more limited. So we need to be really intentional about using everything that we have, right? The other thing is sort of what might be broadly called active listening, right? So again, because the cues are small, we need to be even more intentional about making sure we use every single one of them. So if somebody asks a question and somebody sort of is hesitant in their response, you might sort of reflect back, hey, I heard you say this, but you sounded hesitant. So can I give you another opportunity to maybe to share again? And so being sort of essentially more deliberative about it, because it won't come quite so organically and quite so easily online. We have to put more effort in to getting that information that we're not getting so automatically.
So this all makes sense. And the challenge that I feel is we haven't done it before and it's awkward. It doesn't, because before it was completely natural. Maybe some people were better at it than others, right? Notoriously what we might call extroverts and introverts, but to some degree you kind of know how to interact. But now we've got this, like, we have to be very intentional. And it's hard. And I think about culture, right? Which is just kind of repeated behaviors and the expectations. And as a leader, you have to make it okay and make it like just, or at least acknowledge the awkwardness. Have you had any discussions around like people being like, I don't want to?
Oh, so many times. So in some of my research projects, we force people to essentially, in a Zoom call, empathize and active listen with each other, and they hate it. Yeah. You know, it's so awkward, especially when you've literally never met this person before in your life, and you're like, okay, and now active listen, reflect back what you heard. It's so awkward. The only reassurance that I have is that we still see the empathy gains at the end of that study. So even though it was incredibly awkward, it did actually, in fact, work. They understood each other better. They felt more compassionate for each other. So my only sort of advice is that it does work, even if it's weirdly awkward. I guess my hope is long-term, it become less awkward.
Yeah, that's the only thing I would say, right? As a leader or a manager, you're like, this is what we're doing. I know it's weird. We have to do it. I'm sorry. You know, and maybe acknowledgement, right? Because it's like, God, there's just like, I don't want to do this thing today. And you're like, getting on the call with Josh, you know, and I'm like, he's going to make me do the funny thing. You know what I mean? So it is hard, but I do. Maybe what we need to lead into then is why. Why should we put in this energy? Why should we try to overcome this awkwardness? Why empathy? What benefit does it provide us when we're specifically in a working context, but broadly as well?
Yeah. So I think that the list is just really, really long. So to list some of them off, basically more empathic people, it's benefits to themselves and benefits to others. I think usually we think of the benefits to others. So if you're an empathic manager, then your employees are going to feel more heard, more understood. They're going to feel better. But it actually also benefits you as well in a whole variety of ways, in ways you might not think of, like physical health. Empathic people have better physical and mental health. They have more support systems. Perhaps unsurprisingly, they have more friends because they're nice and empathic to everyone. So empathy benefits the empathizer and the people that are being empathized with. I think that sometimes when there is a pushback against empathy and, you know, what use is it, or even that maybe it's bad, is usually a misunderstanding of what empathy is and thinking it's some kind of being a pushover. Empathy is not being a pushover. Hmm. I can understand what you're thinking and feeling and totally not agree with you and not do what you suggested, but I understand. And that's the key point. Understanding and communicating that I understand and then explaining why I'm not going to do anything that you asked me to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about having a workplace culture that is just everybody bending over backwards to help everybody else in a way that's going to hurt themselves. It's not that. It's understanding what other people are going through and feeling compassion for what they're going through. Even if you can't ultimately solve the problem, that's a whole other podcast, right, on how to solve people's problems. But empathizing isn't that.
Mm. So... there is this benefit, this emotional and physical well-being. That's great. We could all use a little more of that.
And it's so counterintuitive too, because we think that, okay, exerting effort for other people would drain us in some way. Yeah. But actually we see the exact flip. You're actually less likely to burn out at work if you show empathy to others.
Even if you're an introvert?
Oh, well, we didn't actually add that one in as a variable. So I'm going to have to be the scientist and say, I don't know for sure, but we do see it across the board.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, let us know when we're going to add that into the next variable. Because I can, you know, again, as an extrovert, I'm like, great, all day long, would love to connect with any stranger on the street that's willing to stop and talk to me.
Well, I guess the pushback to then, and I am going a little beyond my data here, but empathizing can be done in a very social way, but it can also be done in a private way. So if I am sitting sort of at the back of the Zoom call in that sense and paying deep attention to everyone, and I'm looking at Josh and thinking, Josh looks a little different today. You know, I'm noticing that he's speaking a bit differently. I'm empathizing, even if I'm not doing anything or saying anything and I'm just staying at the back of the Zoom call, I am still working my empathy muscles. And that's going to still benefit me, even if you don't know about it.
Okay, that's great. I love that. And thank you for going a little bit beyond the data. I think that's really useful, right? So it's paying attention. And that's part of the work that we need to do as good coworkers. The other piece of this that I want to link to, and again, you maybe haven't done a study on it, but at least we can talk about how it makes us better coworkers and be able to work better together. Any sort of thoughts in that direction?
Yeah. So empathy really helps collaboration amongst groups that might struggle with collaboration in the first place. So if you have a group of people that come from wildly different backgrounds with different perspectives, those groups are shown to have great outcomes because they normally bounce off each other a little bit, right? Like they don't all cohere into groupthink and all go one way. They actually bounce ideas off each other because they're all coming from different perspectives. Well, empathy helps speed up that process. So if I can understand your perspective faster when you're explaining it to me, we can bounce ideas off each other and come through to this new solution or idea better. So collaboration amongst teams, especially diverse teams from multiple perspectives, ages, backgrounds, etc., are going to collaborate and produce better outcomes if there's more empathy amongst that team. And the other flip side to that is that when a team doesn't have empathy, then you just get a whole host of negative things come from that. There's when people don't feel misunderstood, terrible morale, there's people are more likely to burn out, more likely to leave. So empathy is almost, it's not just a nice to have, it's almost an essential for a working team.
Well, let's go back to the original premise of the question at the very beginning, which is it is a requirement, like it makes teams work better. And in this highly, highly likely that you're distributed world, it is becoming even more consequential to really get good at understanding what other people are thinking and feeling so that you can do better work. You can engage with them. And honestly, if we expand this out, I think this is a tool that we all need to work on, this muscle we need to work on, broadly speaking, too. I feel like there's just not enough compassion. We go to an automatic kind of pugilistic stance, right? Like you're going to fight somebody, and that doesn't work. That's just not how you get things done. And
yeah. Absolutely. I think that especially in a work context, and it comes sort of back to that's not being a pushover thing. Like say Bob's trying to explain his idea to me. It's helpful for me to understand my idea, even if it's so I can just rebut it more eloquently or more clearly. Mm-hmm. And so understanding each other and where we're coming from and our thoughts on it is going to help that process kind of no matter what, even if you never ultimately agree. Which, because mm-hmm. sometimes we're just not going to, but at least we can understand where each person's coming from.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really compelling. So many great pieces of research and ideas. Thank you for doing this work. I think it's really compelling, and I think we need to bring more of it into the workplace. Allison Jane Martingano, she is the host of the podcast Psychology and Stuff. If you want to learn more about what she is up to and listen to her eloquently explain other compelling ideas and interview folks, that's the place to go. She is assistant professor and the director of UWGB's Social Research Lab. You can learn more about her at AllisonJaneMartingano.com. Allison Jane, thanks for spending a few minutes with us on Great Mondays Radio. It was really nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.